Most of us are lucky enough that we don't really know what it's like to be hungry, consistently, chronically hungry. We've never had to choose between paying rent and buying food, and we haven't skipped meals because we couldn't afford to eat. We've seen the images, we've known people going through it, and many of us have had times when we've survived on pasta or ramen noodles or Kraft macaroni and cheese temporarily until the end of the month or until our next paycheck. But we've had the privilege of not having to worry if we would have something to eat tomorrow or the next day or for the rest of the month for much of our lives. Unfortunately, chronic hunger and food insecurity are realities for almost 50 million people here in the United States, including about 14 million children. In Sunday school a few weeks ago, we shared some of the stories about hunger that have touched our lives. My story about the men on the street digging thrown away food out of a trash can. Libby's story about the students who asked her for a second snack so that they could take something home to their sibling. Lynn's story about the families who had accumulated debt at her grandfather's grocery store during the Great Depression and were still making payments 20 years later. It's stories like these that are the why behind our honest conversations this month. The why behind our discussions about how to ensure that everyone has the food they need. And as we've been considering options for addressing food insecurity, we've also been exploring a story of God's abundance in a time of need. The story of Jesus feeding multitudes of hungry people with only a tiny amount of food is one that is familiar, and not just because we've read it 3 out of the past 4 Sundays. It's the only miracle story that appears in all 4 Gospels, which suggests it was also a central story in early Christian communities when stories of Jesus were passed along orally before the Gospels were written down. And yet each Gospel writer added specific details to the story and emphasized parts they considered the most important. Today we take a closer look at the feeding of the 5,000 from the viewpoint of John's Gospel. John's basic story of the feeding of the multitudes is similar to the versions we've already explored in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. A huge crowd was gathered around Jesus in a remote location in Galilee. It got late in the day and people were hungry, but there was only a little bread and a few fish available. But miraculously, Jesus turned a few loaves and fishes into an abundance that fed thousands and thousands of people until they were full, with baskets of bread left over. The outline of the story looks the same in all 4 Gospels, but John also included some details that are not part of the other stories. According to John, the miracle took place during the Passover festival. A young boy was the one who provided the bread and fish. The place where Jesus had them sit down was covered in grass. And Jesus himself distributed the bread and fish to the multitudes in this story. Each of these details makes the story richer and helps us picture what it might have been like to be there. But for the Jewish crowd gathered around Jesus, these details had a deeper meaning to demonstrate that Jesus was the promised Messiah, the fulfillment of the stories and promises of the Old Testament. The fact that John's feeding miracle took place around the Passover festival was especially important. The Passover was one of 3 mandatory pilgrimage festivals when devout Jews were expected to journey from wherever they lived to Jerusalem in order to commemorate God's liberation of Moses and the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. And yet, in John's account, a huge crowd of Jews were gathered during Passover, not in Jerusalem, but around Jesus on the shore of Lake Gennesaret in Galilee. The crowd had followed Jesus into Galilee instead of traveling to the temple in Jerusalem. John's meaning here is clear. Jesus was providing a new meal to replace the ancient Passover celebration. It's important to remember that John's Gospel was not written until between 90 and 100 CE, or 60 to 70 years after the death and resurrection of Jesus. The people hearing about the feeding of the 5,000 would have understood the symbolism of loaves and fishes, because they would have grown up hearing the stories of Moses and the Israelites that we read in the book of Exodus. One of those stories was God's miraculous provision of manna to feed the Israelites while they wandered in the wilderness. After fleeing slavery, the Israelites found themselves in a place where growing food was nearly impossible, and they were hungry. But one morning when they woke up, they found the ground covered in a fine, flaky, delicious substance. And God provided enough of this mysterious substance, which they named manna, to feed the Israelites each day. The Israelites were instructed to collect only as much as they could eat in a day. If they tried to collect extra, it would spoil overnight. Manna was a symbol of human dependence on God for survival, and God provided enough for everyone every single day of the Israelites' 40 years in the wilderness. Our God is a God of abundance. Early Christians would have seen clear parallels between God's provision of manna during the time of Moses and Jesus' provision of bread to the hungry multitudes in John's gospel. Like the manna, the 5 loaves of bread and the fish the young boy offered up were unremarkable. Probably some small pita-sized loaves and a few salty dried fish. Enough for one little boy's lunch, but not nearly enough to feed everyone. And yet, in the hands of Jesus, the food was blessed and multiplied into an overabundance. This was no small miracle. Jesus fed many thousands of people. John's gospel described the crowd as being made up of 5,000 men, using the gender-specific Greek word for man. And although the gospel does not mention them specifically, we can assume there were at least as many women and children there as well. One biblical scholar estimates that the crowd in John's version of the feeding might have been as large as 20,000, enough people to fill Madison Square Garden in New York City. And Jesus transformed one boy's lunch into enough so that all of them had as much as they wanted. To our modern ears, eating as much as they wanted doesn't sound like a big deal, but in ancient Galilee, it was unheard of. And yet, in the hands of Jesus, everyone ate and was satisfied, and the abundance was so complete that there were 12 baskets of bread left over. All ate as much as they wanted, and there was more left over than the boy brought to begin with. And with this miracle, Jesus revealed himself to be not just a miracle worker, but God's chosen and anointed one, the Messiah, the Christ, the provider of God's abundance, not just to a hungry crowd, but to all of us. Those of you who have heard me preach for a while know that American theologian Walter Brueggemann is one of the writers I admire most. Brueggemann captured this idea of abundance in the hands of Jesus when he wrote, quote, "Everywhere Jesus goes, the world is rearranged. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor are freed from debt. When the disciples, charged with feeding the hungry crowd, found a child with 5 loaves and 2 fish, Jesus took, blessed, broke, and gave the bread. He demonstrated that the world is filled with abundance and freighted with generosity. If bread is broken and shared, there is enough for all. Jesus is engaged in the sacramental, subversive reordering of public reality. Jesus presents an entirely different kind of economy, one infused with the mystery of abundance and a cruciform kind of generosity. 5,000 are fed and 12 baskets are left over, one for every tribe. If bread is broken and shared, there is enough for all. From broken Friday bread comes Sunday abundance. People do not grasp, hoard, resent, or act selfishly. They watch as the juices of heaven multiply the bread of earth." Jesus reaffirms Genesis 1. The creation is infused with the Creator's generosity, And we can find practices, procedures, and institutions that allow that generosity to work. End quote. When we read these stories of Jesus feeding 4,000 or 5,000 or more, we tend to focus in on what Jesus did. He took the role of host, said a blessing over a laughably small amount of food, and then miraculously transformed it into enough for everyone. And yet we sometimes forget what the others did. The little boy offered up his bread and fish. The disciples gathered everyone together and had them sit down on the ground. And I'm sure at least a few of the disciples were holding their breath and crossing their fingers, hoping that Jesus could make something big out of essentially nothing. By bringing Jesus what they had and trusting that he could transform it, they played an important role in the feeding of 20,000 people on that Galilean hillside. And that brings us back to today and back to our honest conversations about how to ensure that everyone has the food they need. Even as we have started talking through the options in Sunday school, several of us have acknowledged how big of a task it feels like. Short of adopting every single hungry person into our own families, how can we feed everyone? And yet John's story of the feeding of the 5,000 reminds us that Jesus can do a lot with a little. When faced with hunger in America, we have two options. We can be paralyzed by the impossibility of the task and give up because we feel like we can never make a difference. Or we can present what we have, however meager it seems, and trust that God can make a miracle out of it. Our offerings to the Lawrenceville Co-op, our little food pantry that we're getting ready to establish, our meals for the families of Family Promise, are all ways we can help God feed everyone. And yet there's a big barrier that holds us back sometimes, a scarcity mindset. The Brueggemann quote I shared earlier is from a 1999 essay entitled, "The Liturgy of Abundance, the Myth of Scarcity, Consumerism and Religious Life." In that essay, he starts out by calling out the consumerist culture of the United States by saying, quote, "The majority of the world's resources pour into the United States. And as we Americans grow more and more wealthy, money is becoming a kind of narcotic for us. We hardly notice our own prosperity or the poverty of so many others. The great contradiction is that we have more and more money and less generosity. Less and less public money for the needy, less charity for the neighbor. Though many of us are well-intentioned, we have invested our lives in consumerism. We have a love affair with more, and we will never have enough." End quote. Brueggemann goes on to point out that God's creation is one of abundance. In his own words, quote, "The Bible starts out with a liturgy of abundance. Genesis 1 is a song of praise for God's generosity. It tells how well the world is ordered. It keeps saying, it is good, it is good, it is good, it is very, very good." Story by story, end quote. Story by story, Brueggemann weaves his way through Genesis and Exodus until he gets to the story of the Israelites in the wilderness, where he tells of the newly freed Israelites longing for the security of slavery in Egypt. In Brueggemann's words, again, quote, "In answer to the people's fears and complaints, something extraordinary happens. God's love comes trickling down in the form of bread. They say, manhwe, Hebrew for what is it? And the word manna is born. They had never before received bread as a free gift that they couldn't control, predict, plan for, or own. The meaning of this strange narrative is that the gifts of life are indeed given by a generous God. It's a wonder, it's a miracle, it's an embarrassment, it's irrational, but God's abundance transcends the market economy." End quote. Ensuring that everyone has enough food to eat is not an easy task, as we're discovering in our honest conversations. And yet, we follow a God who created an entire world, and a Messiah who fed thousands with a few scraps of bread. Again and again, Scripture reminds us that God's abundance is greater than our fear. We can help by sharing what we have, small as it may seem, and by working to transform our society from emphasizing scarcity and wanting more into building a world where everyone has enough. It's a tall order, but every small step matters. And when the task feels overwhelming, we can remember the words spoken to Joshua. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And perhaps that is the miracle we are called to trust today, that when we bring what we have and place it in God's hands, there will be enough for all. For our God is a God of abundance. Amen.